Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 system support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, El Mensaje. It's been almost 9 months since Governor Roy Cooper began issuing stay-at-home orders, guidelines, and suggestions depending on COVID's community spread. But when he and his health secretary, Dr. Mandy Cohen, held those regular briefings, they spoke English. That contributed to a communication gap between officials and North Carolina's Spanish speakers. Tested producer Rebecca Martinez wondered what was the message to the Latinx community, or rather, where was it?
Yeah, Spanish interpretation was on a separate feed somewhere.
Hey, Rebecca, so talk to me about the role of public health messaging and COVID-19 trends among Hispanic and Latino people in North Carolina.
So less than 10% of North Carolina's population is Hispanic or Latino. But less than 2 months into the pandemic, Latinos made up half of the state's rise in COVID cases. I suspected a lag in prevention efforts.
So is that what you found?
In the early days of the pandemic, everybody was confused about the best way to proceed, right? Remember when Dr. Anthony Fauci told Americans not to wear masks for a few weeks, and then that we definitely should wear masks everywhere all the time? It took a while for experts and officials to get their stories straight. Eventually, more consistent guidance started coming together, but it took a while before that was translated and shared in a culturally competent way. I spoke to Eliasar Posada of El Centro Hispano, a nonprofit advocacy group in Durham.
And I'm not laying blame on anyone, but I'm saying that when folks don't really hear appropriate messaging or hear in the facts of anything in the language that they speak, yet everyone is hearing it on the other end who, like, you know, speak English, right? You already add a little bit of a dynamic there that's like, well, you're an afterthought. We'll get to you when we get to you. But in the meantime, here's everything in English. And I'll Google Translate some of these things, so I'm sure you can understand it. I know that's not, well, I hope that's not how people are looking at it. But that's how we, what some of our community members have received that messaging.
So public health departments were not releasing enough information in Spanish at first, but you also found out that what was communicated wasn't terribly effective.
Yeah, for information to be meaningful, it needs to be relevant to the people receiving it. I remember when the Department of Health and Human Services began its Remember the 3 W's campaign, reminding North Carolinians to wear a mask, wait 6 feet away from others, and wash their hands regularly. But in Spanish, the 3 W's isn't a thing. It just doesn't translate. And there weren't enough testing locations for people who didn't have cars, and the people who administered tests often didn't speak Spanish and usually wanted payment and a government-issued ID, which many people don't have, especially if they're undocumented. And what if this was all just a hoax anyway? Here's Eliasar Posada again.
We just understood that there's a lot of misinformation as to what the COVID test is, what are the results going to mean, who's going to have access to this information, and am I going to have to pay for it? There was a lot of questions, right? So either I don't trust government or I don't trust, these entities because I've never even heard of them, right? No one had heard of Optimum before we started some of our testing at the Durham office. And because of the trends that we were seeing as far as, you know, the North Carolina legislature as well as the federal government, when it came down to policies that were seen as very anti-immigrant or very anti-undocumented people. Well, they were looking at the government and looking at testing through that lens.
Eliasar said grassroots efforts mobilized Spanish-speaking advocates and healthcare workers to have a lot of one-on-one conversations in neighborhoods to hear concerns and share information. He said they answered a lot of really specific questions, and they had to clarify that personal health information was confidential. mobile testing sites went into neighborhoods with large Latino populations, and community centers hosted testing sites where workers spoke Spanish and could offer other services. El Centro set up a testing site near its offices.
So as the summer progressed, DHHS started promoting more COVID-specific slogans. Did that help?
It seems like it did. In line with the 3Ws campaign, DHHS released the Tres M's with parallel guidance in Spanish almost 3 months later. Spanish language media also increased messaging about coronavirus transmission and public health guidance. But Eliezer Posada said different communities needed specific information, and grassroots organizing was able to accommodate those specific needs. For instance, he said Latinos in Orange County were more open to testing than those in Wake County.
By June, more than 1,000 confirmed cases were being announced every day. DHHS reported that Latinos accounted for about half of the COVID-19 cases in the state back then. What was happening at the state level to address this disparity?
More testing sites came online. The state was scrambling to hire contact tracers, especially those who spoke Spanish. And Dr. Bibiana Martinez Bianchi became a key advisor to Health Secretary Mandy Cohen. Martinez Bianchi is a physician and the director of health equity at Duke's Department of Family Medicine. Since March, she's been hosting a well-attended weekly forum called Latin 19, where policymakers and Latino community members meet to learn more about the effects of the pandemic on the lives of individuals. On June 26th, Dr. Martinez Bianchi joined Health Secretary Cohen on the dais at the live stream state health briefing.
Yes, we can. And now I'm going to repeat what I said in Spanish. Mi querida comunidad latina, estoy aquí como latina, como inmigrante, como doctora, madre, esposa, hermana e hija, y en representación de los trabajadores de la salud.
In her address, she emphasized that many of the jobs we deem essential, farm and construction work, housekeeping, childcare, are done by Latinos, and therefore the state has an interest in taking care of them. Dr. Martinez Bianchi told me recently that she understood the language and cultural barriers that exacerbate the effects of structural racism, keeping this population at a higher risk of the disease.
And I also realized that there were people who lived in this space in society that is vital to the economy of the city, the state, the county, the country, right? And the Latinos and other historically marginalized populations and immigrants occupy that very, very important space. And that if you understand the language, you are going to hear them. But if you don't, it's just noise, right? And so I realized, because I spoke Spanish, that I was able to hear what was going on, and that in many ways I have been translating it into information for colleagues, but I also had to translate it to health systems that wouldn't understand, you know, the issue of documentation or no documentation, or the fear, you know, what it meant for somebody to ask you for an ID if you were in a situation of vulnerability. Seeing that people who are not Latinos are recognizing the value of a culture, they are recognizing the need for education, they are recognizing the contributions of our Latino community into the tapestry of what North Carolina is and into the economy of North Carolina. And instead of seeing them as a burden on the system, they're seeing them as contributors to the system. Those are a big part of the things that I see that actually give me so much hope and saying this is not just for the pandemic, but it's for the afterwards, right? Like it's recognition of values and it's recognition of that they are essential workers, that we have, you know, 95% of the migrant farm workers are Spanish speakers. We know that a large percentage of them are essential workers in construction, in housing, in cleaning, in housekeeping. And so all of that, those are things that I already knew, but suddenly so many more people know about it. And so that gives me hope.
Dr. Martinez Bianchi has been doing a lot more public speaking, and bilingual outreach efforts have expanded at the state, county, and community levels. More COVID-19 testing sites have been established where no one had to provide government-issued ID, and she says hospitals and healthcare workers are paying closer attention to how they assess patients and discuss symptoms with those who are not white or don't speak English as a first language.
I think we have had our colleagues all over the state recognize we need to do better. You know, this underlying issue of paying attention to our long story of having a hard time connecting with this idea of systemic racism, right? Like, we need to talk about racism, and in this case, ethnicism and ethnophobia, as something that is happening in the community. And like, what can we as healthcare professionals rise up against it? Not as an anti-doctor movement, but as I am recognizing I have bias, and this is what I'm doing to not act on those biases and actually listen and hear the stories, right? It's not about playing a blaming game. It's actually understanding what things I don't know about this community that I need to learn to provide better care.
So back in May, Latinos accounted for about half of all confirmed cases in the state. Now they're making up about one quarter, and hospitalizations appear to be down too. Rebecca, explain what's happening with these drops.
Well, right now, COVID-19 cases are skyrocketing across the board. It just seems that Latino and Hispanic people no longer make up an outsized proportion. But more than one-third of all COVID case data has no racial or ethnic information attached to it. And as far as we know, almost all the Latinos who test positive for COVID, 78%, are people under age 50. And while people in this age group do get seriously ill, most do not need to be hospitalized. Dr. Martinez-Bianchi emphasized the role of effective public health outreach in reducing the proportion of Latinos getting COVID.
I think the information campaign has worked. I see that both the efforts at the state level, the local efforts of all the different Latinx community organizations, the outreach, the program with the community health workers through the state, it really is working. What I'm seeing is this: the behavior of the usando la mascarilla, of wearing the mask, maintaining the distance, and it's working. And I think there is more awareness within the space of their work also, right? I see cleaning crews, everybody wearing their mask. I see, I was looking at a construction crew the other day, and I was like, wow, they're wearing the mask when they're together. Like, I think the message has worked.
So that all sounds like pretty good news.
Yeah, I'd say she's cautiously optimistic. But Dr. Martinez-Bianchi seems to worry this progress is fragile. Despite accommodations at testing sites, some of those designed to be especially accessible to Latinos are not seeing the traffic they expect. So when she speaks in public, she's careful to be encouraging as possible.
And does this mean at least everyone's on the same page now?
Dr. Martinez-Bianchi told me she anticipates confusion around the corner as the COVID-19 vaccine becomes more readily available.
The vaccine is one amazing thing that is going to start happening that we're going to be having access to, but it's not the end of wearing the mask, that we have to continue to do this, that until everybody is vaccinated and able to have antibodies against this virus, we still are going to continue on this.
Unfortunately, as pandemic fatigue permeates society, this development is likely to cause confusion in any language.
More about the importance of messaging in a public health crisis in a moment.
The U.S. military is more diverse than ever, but there are still inequities in the armed forces. Women and minorities face barriers to promotion, and transgender people are banned from enlisting at all. Join me, Leonida Inge, and Anita Rao for Uneven Battlefield, a virtual discussion about discrimination in the military, Thursday, December 17th at 7 p.m. Go to events at WUNC.org to RSVP.
Rebecca, like any good podcast producer, you did your research before speaking to Dr. Viviana Martinez-Bianchi, And there's one more moment from your interview that I'd love to share. This came up after the doctor acknowledged the fear and resistance many marginalized groups express in response to messaging from the government.
Sure. So I noticed Dr. Martinez Bianchi grew up in Argentina and spent nearly a decade under a military dictatorship with heavily restricted access to information. Now that she's a public health official who helps disseminate information and guide government messaging for the State Department of Health and Human Services, I had to ask her about the influence of her formative years in her work today.
It influences greatly because I know how people can turn skeptical when the message comes from whoever is in a position of power. Because I saw it happen in my country. I saw it. I'm one of those people who watches every type of news media. I'm not happy with just watching one. And literally right now, I can say that we live in different Americas depending on which radio we listen to, which TV program we watch, right? And so I'm very aware of this and making sure that my message is a message of engagement and recognition of the hard work that everybody is doing in a moment of such stress, right? That we are all tired, right? That our children are tired of being on camera. They are tired of not seeing all their friends. That we as adults are tired of getting together with friends and family. You know, I will be planning to go to Chicago to see my in-laws right now, and I can't. That wearing a mask makes us break out and look terrible. I mean, there's so much. But we have to listen also to the stories of those whose family members are dying and start thinking and weighing, you know, what is the price? What kind of price are we willing to pay for the freedom of not wearing a mask? And I'm lucky not to have had a close family member die from COVID, but many colleagues of mine have. I have lost colleagues, dear colleagues and friends to this. And so I'm always making sure that the message is inclusive of all of that, right? And that we value our freedom. And for those who grew up in this country have always valued the freedom. For us who emigrated here, it was because of that freedom, right? And at the same time, there is a public responsibility. There is a responsibility as a civilian that we each one of us has, regardless of the kind of job we do, to protect each other and to protect the others. And so I that's what I'm trying to bring into the messages.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Our producers are Rebecca Martinez and Charlie Shelton Ormond. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.